Welcome to a podcast on fire, something, 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 100 something, I assume. And it's the episode is called Yesterday You, Yesterday Me. And we're back with a backup show. That's why I'm hesitant about the number. Backup shows means that we couldn't get together to record a mint and fresh and glass puff, or however the lingo out there goes amongst the kids. But it has afforded me, Kenny B, and Hong Kong Dale, which is here also, who's here also, so say hi.
Hi, everyone.
It has afforded us the opportunity to review a trilogy of movies known as the Banana Ripening series. We reviewed the first one, Yester You, Yester Me, Yesterday, as a regular weekly show. But now from the backup show lineup, we're finishing off the trilogy coverage. So this has been a coming-of-age trilogy, if you will. You know, the Hong Kong, the Wonder Years, the equivalent of the Fred Savage TV series, but made in Hong Kong as movies. And it started out with the Samson Churia-directed Yester You, Yester Me, Yesterday, followed by Joe Ma's Over the Rainbow, Under the Skirt, and concluding tonight with Jacob Jung's Yesterday You, Yesterday Me. And John Tang's Bo has reached the age of attending university. John Tang has, of course, starred in all three movies. So what's in store in terms of development and life lessons this time, especially with an ailing dad at home, as we learned during the second movie? So in a very short while, we'll get to a review right away, as this is a backup show. We won't do any network updates or last movies watched. So this is Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network. The website for this and all the other shows, including the smash hit, really, Two-Fisted Podcast. Man, oh man, what a great reception Sylvia and Amber show got. That was really fun.
Yeah, great stuff.
Really, and I mean, it was a great show, I knew that, but and we get feedback and stuff like that, of course, but they really hit a nerve, I think. Mm. You know, and also maybe they underestimated them being the center of a lot of stuff at Facebook. They said that about me, but I'm thinking they were probably a lot more known, bigger, respected than maybe they ever thought. And we never think that as fans of movies, that people look up to us or anything like that, you know, because we're all self-loathing bastards. but you know what, it's really inspiring and fun, and the Two-Fisted Podcast I'm proud to have here on the network along with all the other shows. And Taiwan Noir is a very, very much a new show also, and the feedback has been great for that as well. So I thank you, everybody, and for you, David, you had a listen, left us some feedback. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, really enjoying it. It's definitely your enthusiasm and John as well. It really comes through. So.
And that I'm glad to hear, because you never know really until you let it out. You know, because you know this as a podcaster, you do this within your little bubble. Mm. And after a while, especially if you sit on it a lot and prepare with it a lot, you don't know if it's any good or not after a while, the longer you sit with it. Mm. Very good. And it's not, you know, mandatory for podcast hosts to listen to every show. So that's why I'm thanking you genuinely, David, for listening to Taiwan Noir and leaving feedback and all of that. So
I would like to have gotten to it earlier, but it took me a little while, but I listened to both pretty much back to back. So
it's a subject that is not it's stale, yeah, but we're bringing it back. But that doesn't mean it has a limited window necessarily, because when it's out there, it's obviously online and in the archives and all of that. So so the timing isn't, we're not reviewing the latest stuff, the latest action stuff. Therefore, you can only listen to the show and feel it's relevant during a particular point in time. So
yeah, true.
So it's all good. This is at podcastonfire.com, of course. And our email, if you want to leave some feedback, is podcastonfire@googlemail.com. We have the archive, aka the forum, podcastonfire.com/forum. Old posts, and old members-only archive with hours of extra stuff that we cut together during our first 2-3 years. But nowadays we do exclusive extra content in the bonus episodes selection category, rather, on the website. So check that out. Those are episodes full podcasts, 30, 40 minutes extra, that will never be on iTunes or Stitcher, all exclusively on the website, so you can only download them from podcastonfire.com. And on Facebook, where we all get together, is we have two little endeavors there. The page, facebook.com/PUF network, is our page which you can like and interact with us. But the main interaction, in all honesty, and discussion goes on in the Podcast on Fire Network discussion group. And that you can reach by typing in Podcast on Fire Network, request to be added, and you're in, essentially. No tryout process. I'm not that sleazy. And follow us on Twitter as well, and Stu's exploits, of course, with his viewer habits and what have you. You can all see what he's up to on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. And what I'm up to, you can also follow in three different ways. So goodreviews.com is where I'll do my main writing of big reviews and mini reviews of IFT movies and Taiwanese movies and category 3 movies, and even occasionally movies like Yesterday You, Yesterday Me. It was more like that in the past, though. I'm taking a stand against these movies, absolutely not, but I don't review them as much anymore. You can't focus on it all, but it is a healthy selection of sweet and sleazy stuff on there, if you will. I do video reviews of my main reviews at sleazykvideo.com, little bite-sized video reviews. And I talk of that on Twitter as well, twitter.com/sogoodreviews. And you can, of course, subscribe to this podcast and all the other on the network on iTunes. And if you like the show, leave us a rating and comment. That would be highly appreciated. And if you're like me, though, I don't dislike iTunes, but I do dislike filling up my device with tons of podcasts, and I'd rather stream mine. And we can do that with Stitcher. Go to stitcher.com to download the application to your computer, or you can go to your nearest app store and download the free application to your smartphone and tablet and listen to it that way. And if you want to add the various network shows, you can just type in Podcast on Fire Network, and each show can be added individually, including the ones that we just talked about, the new ones and all that. And of course, Hong Kong Dave has his little endeavor on Facebook as well, so tell us what that is about, David.
Yeah, it's Hong Kong Gig Guide, lots of gig listings and photos and events and things of that nature. Plenty of stuff going up every day, pretty much every day. So, if people want to pop along and check it out, it'd be nice.
Cool. And those links are, as always, in the show post for this episode. And that is, we're done with that crap. Now let's move on to some other crap. Or maybe it's not crap. You never know. You don't know what we think of this movie yet. But maybe I showed my hand a little bit too early. But regardless, listen to a different rendition of Bee Gees, the 1st of May, during the break here. So be right back. Okay, welcome back, and we reached the review of Yesterday You, Yesterday Me from 1997. So these movies were made in a time span of 4 years, 1993, 1997. I had to think about that. I'm crap at math. Is it 4 years? Yeah, I think it's four years. But that's the they took their time and let the actor John Tang grow suitably too. Because I don't think it would have really worked if they made them like 3 years in a row. They wouldn't be able to sell him as a university student, which he is in this movie. And the plot that I generously copied from Love HK Film, and their review of the film is in the show links as well, show post links, so check that out. So, the saga of UFOs, so that is United Filmmakers Organization, UFO's Banana Rightning series continue under writer-director Jacob Jung. Our regular protagonist, Bo, played by John Tang, finally reaches college. I think it's college or university, but whatever. But apparently still has some growing up to do as he struggles with the opposite, as his struggles with the opposite sex continues. He and Ting Ting are now apart, and his current girlfriend Ling is heading abroad to study. Once in school, he finds a number of ripe candidates, but it's an older, wiser student named Jean, played by Yung Ching, that he grows to love. In other news, Dad, played by Eric Tsang again, goes to the hospital because of a developing throat cancer, and Bo must deal with acclimation to school and such. So, I want to do some minor name dropping here in terms of the crew first. We mentioned Jacob Cheung, but the writer is Aubrey Lam, which was once upon a time an in-house writer for UFO, and the credits her scripts include Heaven Can't Wait, Who's the Woman, Who's the Man, and Lam later became a director in her own right, a writer-director of 12 Nights, which was an Ethan Chan Cecilia Cheung movie, I believe.
Yep.
And The Hidden Track was one of her second movie, I believe. I didn't explore her filmography extensively. I think she's made like 3 or 4 movies, but at least based on those two, ambition was there, but she was not quite there yet. It didn't really pan out, but certainly wasn't penning standard template 1A type of scripts. Definitely not, so. And, having said that, I'm thinking that I watched like one or maybe more movies. Yeah, I watched Anna and Anna as well, the Carina Lam movie, because she played two roles. Wasn't really too wild about that movie either, so it seems like Aubrey is trying, there's nothing wrong with that ambition, though. I definitely agree with that, because it could, if they were movies that felt like, just I'm placing the camera here and go ahead and talk. I would have disliked them a lot more, but there was ambition there, and there is ambition there, so who knows. Do you have an experience with those movies, therefore, 12 Nights, Hidden Track?
Yeah, I've got 12 Nights. I've not seen it in a while, but...
A bit depressing, to be honest, really. Mm. I mean, it's a relationship drama, but it's not harrowing as such, but it is kind of a downer.
Yeah, I mean, the performance is pretty decent, and like you're saying, you don't get the impression as a director she just wants to kind of, she's got like doesn't want to make it really basic. She's sort of kind of trying things, even if it doesn't necessarily sort of hit the mark all the time. But it's probably worth a rewatch. I might rewatch that one.
Mm-hmm. And the director, Jacob Cheung. I mean, we talked a little bit about his work at the end of the last review for the Banana Writing series, Over the Rainbow, Under the Skirt. I mean, he's a fantastic director. This is not where we'll get to our main views, but I can say this much. This is not his best movie, definitely not. But man, oh man, what a fantastic, run. And there's dips, of course, but, to quote just 4 or 5 movies, Beyond the Sunset, Cage Man, which is a fantastic social drama, Always on My Mind, again, the Michael Hoy terminal illness drama.
Yeah, it's really good.
Oh, you've seen it by now?
Yeah, got that, yeah.
Really funny, but really heartbreaking too,
Yeah, it's a hard line to sort of make that work. Make both sides of that work, but it really does the job on that one.
Yeah. I mean, when they do play, or rather, you can hear Peter Chan sing. I think it's Peter Chan singing Always on My Mind.
Yeah.
During the end of the montage. Man, oh man. Did you know there's, by the way, an alternate ending to that film?
No.
I'll tell you about that after the show, because it will actually spoil the movie. further movies like The Kid, which is a great Leslie Cheung movie, that's Dick true. Long, Karim. Just straightforward stuff. Midnight Flyer, talked about really punishing stuff, but a great Anita Moy movie, and even did like bigger movie, so to say, Battle of Wits, which I've yet to see, but it's an Andy Lau movie, and looks, it was one of those big costume epics that didn't necessarily turn me off beforehand. Did you at any point see a Battle of Wits?
I think I have, but I don't remember it making a big impression on me. Yeah. I think he handled the sort of the scale of the production perfectly sort of well. I just the storyline I don't didn't really grab me. If I remember correctly, it's been a while since I've seen it, but.
Mm. It's 6 years old by now, that movie. Came out in 2006. But, you know, it's safe to say I think Jacob does his best work and has done his best work, yeah, doing small movies.
Yeah.
And Cage Man probably being the high point.
I've not seen that one. I'd like to. It's quite a hard one to get hold of, I think.
I have the Laserdisc regardless, so I can copy it for you. And it's the Laserdisc with the Dolby Stereo soundtrack, which was not expected from that movie or any Hong Kong movie of the early 90s, which is a good thing, you know, despite it being a talky movie. They did mix it in stereo, so that's always good. And lots of veterans, and it's you know, it's a social drama about these, I don't know if you can necessarily call them homeless, but they are men that living literally in cages, like in houses where they live in individual cages. And the government is threatening to, you know, clear them out, essentially. Yeah. So you got Ku Feng in there, Roy Chow, Liu Kaqi plays a mentally handicapped man, won an award for that film. And again, Victor Wong from Big Trouble in Little China is in it. And it's all good. A very, very, very good film. And liked film by those who've seen it, definitely. But that's Jacob Cheung, and that's Aubrey Lam. And again, on Aubrey, I think she, if we go into my views a little bit on the film, I have mixed feelings about this film. I think it's very uneven, but has some good things here and there. And in my mind, I think she immerses herself into the series a little bit too in a comfortable way. She gives all of this a meaning that was already available in Samsung Choice Vision, and that is, obviously they are extending themes that were present in the first movie, but it is getting a bit repetitive, to be honest. That's my problem with this, and it has individual scenes that are really great, but in short, for now, I don't think this movie was needed when all was said and done. So that's my short bite-sized opening of my review. So what about you, David?
Yeah, I think it's a fair comment. It's, you know, it's perfectly a decent film. It just, you know, it suffers from the sort of, I guess, you know, unless you make, you know, making sort of very rare films, there's a natural kind of drop-off with sequels. And, you know, and it's the same for these. There's not the same kind of, you know, emotional kind of bite in the film. It's, you know, it's great. It's fine. It's just, you know, it's not as good as the first two were.
Yeah, you're definitely measuring it against the former movies because they were great. And you expect, I actually do, from UFO and Jacob Cheung, for this to be really good. I mean, I went into it with high expectations back then and came out thinking that this is probably the first Jacob Cheung dud I've seen. But as you said, it doesn't mean it's bad or anything. You know, it doesn't mean I'm going to start new Police Story hating on it or anything.
Yeah,
like that.
It just suffering comparison.
Yeah. And again, I mean, all of this is an extension of what we know of the character of Bo, and his current development means that some things are going to be repeated, because you learn lessons, you mess up, you learn lessons, you mess up in similar ways throughout your life. At least that's my experience, that's my opinion, you know. So they don't make it that movie-perfect logic. Well, he learned about a particular... he learned a particular lesson about women and sex and love when he was 14 years old. And now, let's see, if he's 16, he will never, ever make that mistake again. Of course he will. Course he will. He's a dude, you know. First of all, he will. You know, we are train wrecks, you know. And this is, a young man who's now going into college. His mind is on a lot of things, you know, but primarily sex and... And ultimately, I think that is quite a realistic snapshot of a male, of very strand of force, but the one that he focuses on the best is sex. Even though it necessarily isn't, you know, having sex all the time, but, you know, he's...
thinking about it, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always been that.
Yeah.
Which I always liked about the first one, because it was very frank sexually, without being vulgar, obviously.
Yeah.
I think it's even a Category 1 movie, so it can't be vulgar necessarily. But, you know, there's that wonderful little beat where His girlfriend leaves, as we read in the plot, but then he gets to finds out that girls and boys live on the same floor at university or college. So all's well again. Yeah. You know, <ooh. laughs> where's this going? And all is obviously still narrated by Lao Qingwan, who's you know, very, it's very chaotic narration, because occasionally the narration, you know, shouts out, no, don't do that. You know, it's really interactive in that regard. But and the main thing that is repeated, and I want your opinion of that, is that the girl that he falls in love with, it feels like it is repeating the second movie again. He falls in love with a girl who's interested in culture and politics, and is very unpredictable, very frank as well. You know, he can't interpret her signals because she feels it looks like she's coming on to him. In fact, she's not. She's just that frank, open, and in this case, very much a politically engaged woman. So, I think that actress really got a fair chance to stand out, because it feels like such a repeat from Over the Rainbow Under the Skirt, in my opinion.
Yeah, I hadn't really made that connection when I watched the film, but you're right, it is covering a lot of the same ground. They try and put in some contrast there, but it doesn't really work. You are getting the same, essentially the same thing again.
Mm-hmm. And she's fine, you know, Yang Qing's fine, yeah, is fine, but fine. It feels like they couldn't make her stand out in a unique way. There's always been an older woman in all of the movies. In the first movie, it was Shirley Loy, and but it's always been that. So obviously, they are trying to make it consistent all throughout. I get that, but unfortunately, it felt like it was repetitive. He even watches, you know, movies, art movies, boring art movies, in this one as well. So that wasn't the natural extension for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, like you're saying, they're going for sort of the consistent sort of thing, but you know, the danger there is you know, as we're sort of discovering, that you know, consistency can veer towards repetition. So.
Mm-hmm. And there's obviously also the theme of the maturing, obviously, and then one of the earlier passages in the film is that almost montage of his various encounters, mostly close to sexual, because one of the earlier images is of him making out with one of his girlfriends, and she asks, you know, what do you see in your future? What do you want to do in your future? And the early images is of him in the playground, not having a sexual encounter with another girl, but she asks that very future, and you can see him like being a smooth talker all throughout the ages. You know, I want to marry a pretty girl like you. So, but that's also girls testing him, obviously. You know, you know, asking those difficult questions at the most kind of inappropriate times. You know, what do you want to do with your life in the middle of making out? But you know, he's still a dick in this movie, because man, at least the subtitles do make him stand out in a very improper way. He actually calls a girl a slut.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I've made a note on that bit. Yeah,
not cool though. Not cool. I know you're a kid, but that's never cool. That's not cool ignorance to like lean on. Well, I'm just a kid. I can call. He calls girls slut in his mind. You know, the narration by Lao Qingwan. Calls a girl that he meets at an elevator who's kind of into him. You know, what a slut, I like it.
Yeah. Bow.
Bad bow. Bad.
Naughty boy.
But it doesn't mean that he gets much action or anything necessarily, because he is insecure and he doesn't really know how to behave or interpret signals, which is, I like all of those themes in writing, on paper anyway. And it was perfectly materialized in Yes to You, Yes to Me, Yesterday, where he was really a kid. Not obnoxious, but you know, he didn't know anything about anything. And we are Closer goes in on his newly found love of film. They hint on of that a little bit, because in the second movie, it actually opens on a shot that is from one of his films, which is a still shot of trees in the wind, you know, really pretentious pretentious filmmaking. So we get, we get the images of that, and those are correct instincts. But they're still dangerous repetitions that lead to individual scene highlights, though. And I'm sure you made a note about kind of the, you know, the series was racy in the first movie, you know, frank sexually. Here it's really frank sexually because of the roommate, the masturbator roommate. You know, we get 4 or 5 scenes of fucking Bo's roommate, you know, masturbating in crazily. You know, we essentially see it because he it's not subtle masturbation under his sheet. And he, when he's done, he starts again. And there's even a time lapse thing where Bo is, you know, depressed, lying in bed in 3 days, and we see fucking his roommate playing with his blow up doll in the background, you know, moving all fast and stuff like that in time lapse. So I don't know, I like it as individual funny passages, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's a bit where he's got you know, he's got the his girlfriend, quite, you know, quote unquote, you know, in his on the bottom bunk, and he thinks the guy's, you know, thinks he's going at it again. He pops up to have a word with him, and he's got this, like, a back scratcher or something.
You know, the one
time.
Don't
know what he's doing with it, but...
You're having naughty thoughts, David, about where that back scratcher went in reality. Oh, my God. And there's even funny bits where he's early in the film waiting for Jean, the Yung-Ching character, at the pier, waiting for her. And he says, like, I'm going to wait 15 more minutes, and then I'm going to go. Then
it gets dark.
You can even hear Lao Ching-Wan, the narrator, getting tired. Yeah. You know, I'll wait another 15 more minutes. So, you know, those are highlights. But then again... all the tangents, the main tangents, didn't feel like man, did we get a huge continuation and you know, huge lessons learned for Bo here. But the advantage, though, and I don't know what you think of this, because people want movies to end properly with you know, this is the final chapter and here we are, this is the end. These movies do not cover his entire life, obviously.
No.
It's only a snapshot of 5, 6, 7 year period in his life, and you know, because if they were to cover his entire life, that would have meant 20 movies, and I'm not sure they would have been able to keep that up. But do you like that? As you know, now with the series finally seen, and you get all the you got all the spectrum and all that. Do you like that? It's merely a snapshot. Do you think it's somewhat complete, despite?
Yeah, I mean, because it covers you know, a very, you know, significant sort of period of anyone's life, really, a kind of, you know, teenage years, and, you know, starting to grow up. So it's you know, pardon the use of the expression, it's a fertile period for mm-hmm. you know, to cover in any sort of you know, any kind of films. But you know, it's here it's you know, is an ideal kind of stage of life to cover, just because there's, you know, it's such a, you know tumultuous time in any kind of young man's life. So it's a good choice, you know. You could have gone on, but you know, it's you've got as much in these sort of 3 films, maybe sort of less so in this one, but you get as much in these 3 films in terms of sort of kind of, you know, life lessons and, you know, things learnt that mm-hmm. I don't think you didn't need, you don't need to make any more, you know, you didn't necessarily need sort of this one, but you know, it's nice to have a sort of a trilogy.
Yeah, in a way, yeah, even if the third one is good on paper only, because in actuality they kind of quickly finished off the fates at the end of the second movie. They had narration talking about he eventually married, and what his wife's name was, and that he got a kid. They put that in a narration. So it was kind of like, I think we're done now. But then a few years later, they still brought up the still brought this up, which is a good idea. I mean, you know, he's a different kind of stages in life in terms of his scholastic, you know, structure as well. You know, he's in different kind of schools in each movie. You know, and this is a big leap. So it's not a bad thing. And I mean, John Tang, you know, the lead, he is this kid. I mean, he is really good, and has always been likable, despite the character obviously being structured around the fact that he's not likable at all times. He's a kid; he doesn't know any better at points. But I'm really enjoying him still, you know, despite partly him doing this in his sleep. But he's comfortable in Bo's skin, you know. And what I really liked about this movie, rewatching it, he's obviously getting more. He's getting older, and you can see in this movie why girls would kind of fall for him. Because he's a good-looking kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And even though he's, you know, he's a bit goofy, but it feels more natural when he's this age, that the girls were kind of like, we'll smile at him when he's walking down the corridor and what have you. It's not nerdy in that regard, you know?
No, I think it's... You know, his performances in the three films, definitely one of the highlights of the trilogy. Mm-hmm. Overall, I think. I mean, there's lots of things to like in them, but his performance, you know, from the first through to this film, it's definitely it's one of the highlights for me anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, along with Eric Tsang, of course, who returns as the father. And as good as he is, because he's such a great actor, especially at this time, it's fucking sloppy the way they portray him in this one, and I'm gonna explain why. In the second movie, they made him look a bit older, grayed him up. Here he looks younger. It looks like he walks straight from the set of Comrades, Almost a Love Story. And it's really a disservice to the crucial background presence Tsang is. Despite him being as good as ever, and now, you know, he's ailing, he's sick, and they still get very sweet scenes together, John Tang and Eric Tsang. I mean, if any highlight stands out for me, it's their scenes, their one-on-one scenes that they got a fantastic one, because his throat cancer means they've taken out his whatever you call it, I can't find the words now, but he can't speak, he can only whisper now. Yeah. And John Tang shaves him because he can't do that himself, and they are whispering back and forward in a moment they share only. You know what I mean? Mm. And that made it, you know, an intimate scene even more intimate, because that's the only way they can communicate, with him whispering. And I like that. You know, these two are, you know, so inspiring to see a veteran and an untested actor gel as instantly as these two did. I mean, if you remember the moments from the first movie up until this one, they have a moment in each and every film.
Yeah, they're really just terrific sort of one-on-one scenes together.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of younger again, what the fuck happened with the casting of the mother? You know, she's 20 years younger in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's the third film, the third different actress, isn't it?
Yeah, Go Gay Kwan. Yeah, I'm not familiar with the actors, I only looked up the name. But, you know, Fung Bo Bo in the first movie, Lo Kun Lan in the second, you know, same age roughly, and yeah. Here's she looks like she's 35, and she's she's a great looking mum and all that and a woman, but come on, man.
Yeah, it doesn't really work. I mean, you're saying about the sort of the continuity sort of aspects when it comes to sort of Eric Tsang, and him looking older in the second film and then younger here, and it's just, you know, it's one of the sort of things that is sort of a sort of disappointment that there was, you know, the different mums in the three different mums in three different films. It's, you know,
I didn't have a problem with it in the second movie, because the casting was still, you know, logical in terms of the age.
That's the thing that they've missed here. It's someone who looks at least, I would think she was as well, but certainly looks considerably younger than either of the first two actresses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's strange because UFO was supposed to be this, you know, bit, let's say, classier, more thorough. They wanted to make, you know, good movies, not just shot in a week, Wong Jin style of exploitation movies or what have you. You know, they were focused, seemingly. And here the focus really was lacking. You wonder, where was Peter Chan overlooking this shit? But, you know, Jacob Cheung co-formed this company and all of that, and Eric Sang certainly also so. So you wonder, like, they were, I don't know, it really puzzles me, and I really quite as much as I love Eric Sang, I also dislike it kind of heavily as well, because, you know, if anyone should, you know, voice his opinion about this, hey, remember second movie that I was in? That I liked. I liked that movie. You remember? I had gray in my hair, but shut the fuck up. Action. Okay. So, who knows? But with all this in mind, though, it's kind of hard to truly let go of the film series, as these three films are. You know, they do present a compelling human journey, of a flawed kid's journey. You know, that is barely started. You know, he's experienced a lot, but it's not lacking in realism, you know what I mean? Because tragedy and various, you know, various girlfriends can come and go during a 3-4-5 period in your life, as you describe, you know, this particular part in your life. You know, it can be filled with drama.
True. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's not been conveniently scripted overall either, because again, they do bring this character, the audience, like, dislike of him is quite heavy, especially in the second movie, and so it's not, again, template 1A where it's all likable characters or all this you know, unsympathetic characters. I like that they are challenging us by writing him as a completely flawed and kind of obnoxious kid at points, again in the second movie, that, you know, you really get tested. He laughs at his best friend and eventually has to beg for forgiveness, you know. But that's what he does. Thankfully, he does that, you know, and does the right thing most of the time.
Yeah.
And here, even I forgot to mention, even there's an aspect here that he feels disconnected to his family. He doesn't really like it at university, but doesn't really want to go home either. He feels he's kind of left in the, you know, without a focus about what he really wants to do, and he even says, like, I don't want to study anymore, I want to go to work. So that's a tangent, you know, because that leads to Eric Sang obviously having that very important speech that is always important, you know, study hard, you gotta study hard.
Yeah.
So there's life lessons here, and we get a little of a repeating motif, of course, in terms of music. The Bee Gees' First of May is in here, but it's a cover version sung by a Chinese singer. I can't identify who it is. It didn't say at the end. It merely said the Gibb brothers were credited for the music and all of that. So they don't use it as much, the First of May, this one. Because the other movies were almost wall-to-wall Bee Gees music in that regard.
It's just the one time in this, really, wasn't it? I think.
And at the end, the end credits. But you're right, it's layered under one scene that takes place in a few different locations. And by the way, without spoiling it, what did you think of the mysterious home video footage in this one? Because they use home video footage, but you're kind of thinking, what the hell is this, some dumb style where Jacob Cheung is thinking, I'm gonna shoot it like home video, but an illogical way. It's not someone in a family member shooting him, it's us looking at him, kind of. But it's not that, it's a mystery. But without spoiling it, what did you think of that mystery?
I don't know, it didn't really didn't really work for me, that.
I know. It was just like, oh, that kind of makes sense. Well, whatever. Yeah, because all we can say is someone has been shooting him, but for what purpose, you know? And out of all things, by the way, this may go against what me and Thomas talked about on our Tom of Fires, with us not caring that much about if a movie looks VHS in quality or watching it on a long laser disc and what have you. But I think on this DVD, which is from the cinema print and the same laser disc master, probably the movie looks dull. It looks brown and kind of muted, the colors are muted. It needed some color. I thought it kind of was a disservice as well, that the movie doesn't really look good.
Yeah, it looked quite a soft looking picture.
Yeah.
Didn't really...
And straight, a straight movie, you know, shot in a straight way without too much style, it's not a bad thing, but I thought, like, a little bit of color, a little bit would have benefited this, but yeah, it's a series to respect, and it is sincere, and Jacob Cheung is sincere, but and my final tally on this, and I'll let you give whatever notes you have left, it's when Jacob Cheung goes on even the slight autopilot, there he's proving with this picture that there will be no distinction akin to Cageman or Beyond the Sunset. Despite working with this, like, cinematic language is very much comfortable in, you know, shooting things straight. It's not as pretty as I would have hoped in that regard, considering, you know, they got a by then really, you know, acclaimed filmmaker to finish off this trilogy. It should have been good, but unfortunately it wasn't more than slightly memorable. So, what do you want to say more about the film?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it was the third film they, you know, once they decided that's what they wanted to do, and, you know, I guess they were looking around for someone to do it, and, you know, he was available there to do it, and, you know, he did a fine job. It's just, it's hard, it's hard for him to make you know, a distinctive input. Maybe if he had been on board the Fever, the first or the second film, you know, he might, you know, he would have had something more to work with. But you know, he did what he could. It's not his best work, or, you know, not the best of the three films either. But, you know, he tried. It's decent without being distinguished.
Yeah. Did you ever see The Kid, or have you just heard of it?
No, I've seen that. It's been a long time. I did have the VCD a good number of years ago, but I have seen it. I wouldn't mind seeing that again. I don't know what its availability is at the moment. But.
Yeah, Mayar never put out a remastered DVD of it. Oh. It was on VCD by Mayar and DVD by Mayar, but that's probably not in very obtainable, at least not online officially. You know,
I remember the cover picture. It's like a drawing or sort of a painting or something of,
yeah,
of
mixture kind of yeah, yeah,
of like Leslie and the little boy,
but it is a really, really good film, and very, you know, there's probably tons of social commentary in there, but it's a very simple story to follow, and that sub story with Dick Long as the policeman and the Carrie in a very dressed down, without, you know, picture Carrie without makeup, and you get, you know, a perfect, she plays a slightly older woman living in this apartment complex, and it just works, you know. Carrie didn't need to be in naked killer mode with those, you know, red lips all the time. She could play it incredibly well in terms of being dressed down.
Yeah, I think didn't she win an award for Kid?
Yeah, I believe so. Either her and or Dick Long for supporting acting, and well deserved. I thought that was just you used an expression I latched onto when we reviewed the first movie in the Banana Writing series. You know, talking about correct pitch, and man, oh man, that Jacob did well in those movies. In that movie, yeah, you're right. I was looking it up in the meantime. Both of them got an award at the Hong Kong Film Awards. Dick Long and Carrie. And obviously Leslie is fantastic in the movie as well. So yeah, go look that up. It's Jacob Cheung kind of rebounding after, because they took a 2-year break between this and The Kid, which was 1999. This is 1997.
Yeah, I think so. And, yeah.
So that's and action fans should probably look up Lover's Tear, because it is an action drama with a lot of action cast members being put to use in a drama quite well across the board. It stars Nai Singh, it stars Nina Li Chi, Lam Ching Ying, Elvis Choi, Sammo Hung, and it's a pretty decent action drama, especially good for Nina Lichi, who plays a mute, and Lam Ching Ying as well, plays a mute, sort of a mute hitman that works for Elvis Choi's character, and Elvis Choi is fantastic in it as well. And that mixture, I think, was really cool. Like, you put forth a challenge, you know, here's we got something for you, can you all assemble, you know? And they did, you know. There's, when you read that, whoa, Sammo Hung, nice thing, Yukari Oshima is in it, for fuck's sake, Gu Feng, Elvis Choi, a drama, it works. And Lam Ching Ying directed action as well, and produced by Sammo and Lam Ching Ying. You know, so check out Lover's Tear if you can. It's one of those movies that isn't very available. I don't think it was widely on VCD even. I saw a Laserdisc of it myself. But, you know, the file sharing community should be able to help you out in that regard. And same for tonight's movie, Yesterday You, Yesterday Me. It was out on Mayar DVD. Problem is with Mayar DVD's old ones, I don't think they're printed anymore or extensively printed anymore. So they are either out of print or slowly but surely getting out of print, depending on the title we're talking of here. Because some sell better than others. DVDs that were put out at the same time, you know, let's just use an almost unrelated example, but Mayar put out a DVD of Coolie Killer, the classic Terry Tong new wave action movie. Hard to find as hell. And maybe it was released at the same time as Yesterday You, Yesterday Me, but it just wasn't printed a lot. It sold out quickly, and then they never decided to do a huge run on it again. So the old Mayar DVDs, maybe even the new Mayar DVDs. I mean, did you get any impression checking stores in Hong Kong that they had these remastered Mayar DVDs lying around? Or
no, I didn't.
Because you know they started to re-release their catalogue, but with new prints a few years ago. They were planning on doing the Mission. They did the God of Gamblers movies and stuff like that. So
yeah, there definitely seems to be a obviously you still got the new stuff, but kind of back catalogue seems to be sort of patchy out there, and getting worse as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you often find films in one store and you don't find them in any others. Mm-hmm. It's quite patchy for that. Definitely back catalogue movies. Yeah,
mm-hmm. That was kind of cool though when Mayar did that, because they were not releasing stuff that never appeared on DVD before, and if they were on VCD before, they were very old presentations that weren't even in widescreen. I mean, we got to see Butterfly Murders in widescreen for the first time in a really battered print, but we got to see it in widescreen. The VCD was full screen cropped, and it was really hard to see that way. And the same with We're Going to Eat You, if we're talking more Choi Hawk movies, came out remastered by Mayar, so it was an advantage to upgrading their catalog, re-releasing movies that weren't DVD, but those that never made it to DVD.
Yeah, I mean, on the inside covers for the Choi Hawk DVDs, I've taken a look there, and there's listed a load of other sort of titles by kind of new wave, so-called new wave films that I don't think ever actually kind of surfaced. Whether they had the plans to do them also, but.
Yeah, I mean, I know Mayar has some Alan Fong movies. You know, they are deserving of a wider release, and I was sad that those advertisements that you're talking about, that all of them didn't come out. I mean, we did get stuff like The Imp, the Charlie Chien horror movie, which is fantastic. Also, a new wave horror movie. So I'm grateful for what we get. And
yeah,
I mean, there were great prints as well. Because what I like about their remastering process is that they didn't necessarily clean them up. They struck quite colorful, detailed prints, but didn't start like Hong Kong Legend style cleaning up all the dirt and stuff. And therefore, they kind of retained also print quality, film-like quality, which I like. Film-like quality isn't akin to look at all the damage, but you get an organic look when you leave it untouched. It's kind of a problem with Blu-rays. When you start to filter the damage and all of that, you kind of are scrubbing the film-like organic look as well.
Yeah, I mean, the DVD of the Butterfly Murders that I've got, it's got like an odd kind of green I don't know if it's disc damage or something, but there's like an odd kind of green wash.
No, no, no. It's the seasonal corporation storage conditions are not good, because you've seen that, like, it's actually yellow staining all throughout the movie, and it's kind of distracting. Yeah. But it is true for many seasonal movies. If people saw Legend of a Fighter on a Hong Kong Legends DVD, they did clean that up, but it still has evidence of that yellow staining. So it's kind of a seasonal originated thing. Because if you look at the Butterfly Murders, if you were to imagine the staining not being there, the print is actually very sharp.
Yeah,
but it is inherited in the print originally, maybe due to storage conditions once upon a time, and then they could never fix that unless they really spent $1 billion on a remastering, which they won't.
The DVD of We Going to Eat You is considerably better, though.
It was, absolutely. I mean, they only had mild staining in that regard. So, so we got to do seasonal movies on this show. I love early seasonal stuff. People know Drunken Master, Snake and Eagle Shadow from seasonal, but they did a bunch of cool movies, all up until, Green Snake, and In Between or Retreat No Surrender, that was seasonal. But these movies as well, the Choi Hawk movies, the early ones, they're fucking cool. all good. But I guess that concludes it for now. We're done with a coverage. Let's move on to another coverage. On the main show, we are planning, and maybe when you hear this, we've started it. But we're in the midst of checking out some Milky Way movies for Johnny To, Waikawa Production Company's movies that are kind of forgotten. They are loved, some of them, but some of them are forgotten, especially the ones that weren't directed by Johnny To. So we're looking at those like Beyond Hypothermia, Final Justice, which has Eric Tsang as this nasty triad boss, and all good. So we're having fun here. So. But we're done with this one, and it was very memorable. But if I rewatch them, I'll probably... I don't need to rewatch the third one, necessarily. The first two are fine, and I know the rest of the story, because I have the movie kind of fresh in memory, the third one. So no need for the third one. And the better renditions of the first of May is in the first two ones, because it's the original, and that makes me cry. So therefore, I don't need the third movie that didn't really touch me. But regardless, this has been Podcast on Fire on the Podcast on Fire Network, one of the backup shows, but not a shabby show necessarily. The website, podcastonfire.com, email podcastonfire@googlemail.com, the old forum, podcastonfire.com/forum, where you have the members only archive for those who have registered before, but we have the bonus episode section on the website that we post in every now and again. Those are website exclusive episodes, not on iTunes, not on Stitcher. And on Facebook, join the discussion group. Type in Podcast on Fire Network in the search bar, and you can request to be added. And like our page as well, facebook.com/PUF Network. And follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/Podcast on Fire. And my triple X endeavors, sometimes it's triple X actually. SoGoodReviews.com, SleazyKVideo.com, and follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/SoGoodReviews. I mean, we it's triple X endeavors over here at the network as well. We've done a This Week in Sleaze on hardcore porn movies, and we're going to do more. It's gonna be all good. And follow us on iTunes by subscribing to us. And if you like the show, please leave a rating. Please leave a comment. That would mean the world to us. And stream us via Stitcher as well. Stitcher.com, where you can download the application to your computer. And go to your nearest app store if you want to download a free application to your smartphone or your tablet and stream us that way. When you're in Stitcher, type in Podcast on Fire Network, and you can add each show individually, including Two Fisted Podcast, Taiwan Noir, and the Hardcore Porn Show as well. All, it's your choice. But I recommend the Hardcore Porn Show, it's fun. And tell us again about Hong Kong Geek Guide.
Yeah, there's always something happening on there, so feel free to check it out.
And go to gigs. That David, yep. If you're in Hong Kong, check out the gigs to go to. I mean, the cheap gigs to get into, I reckon, as well. Maybe free.
Yeah,
gigs.
There's some, free to, equivalent of, a few pounds, a few euros. Anything up to sort of the big Touring X. So yeah, you got the full range here. So.
Very good. What's the like? What's popular over there, or is just all over the map in terms of these gigs that you promote? I mean, is it punk rock, regular rock, or is it pop music? Or?
Yeah, they've got a pretty good range. You've got a pretty good kind of acoustic kind of scene. You know, kind of indie pop, indie rock, you know, through kind of...
In canto, in English, or that's mixed
A mixture. Mm. You got sort of, you know, it's kind of straight up kind of heavy metal, punk, hardcore. Yeah, so.
Cool.
It's got a good range.
Alrighty. Okay, this is us for the backup show, one of the backup shows. So this has been Kenny B, and with me was Hong Kong Dave.
Bye.